But I want to look at Psalm 2 tonight. So let's start by reading it together. It says, Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and his anointed, saying, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh, and the Lord shall hold them in derision. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. Yet I have set my king on my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord has said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will give you the nations for your inheritance and ends of the earth for your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. Now, therefore, be wise, O kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all those who put their trust in him. Now, tonight, with this little time in the psalm, we're going to briefly delve into one of the great secrets of history. And this secret is a conspiracy theory, letting you know up front. And it's a conspiracy theory within a conspiracy theory. We look at Psalm 2 and we learn about a global conspiracy theory that is behind all world governments, all institutions, all centers of power. But we're also going to learn about a counter conspiracy theory. It's hidden within the conspiracy theory, but it's higher. It goes deeper. A secret government that is above and over all governments, all seats of power in this world. So as we go through Psalm 2, I want to treat it in four sections. The first section of this psalm, found in verses 1 through 3, and if you were to subtitle this section of Psalm 2, you could call it The Powerful Rage and Plot. The Powerful Rage and Plot. And this section describes the universal, the historic conspiracy that is now in place and will continue. Now, who are the participants in this conspiracy? It's all who hold power in this world. Verse 2, he calls them the kings. He calls them the rulers. Verse 10, they're the kings and the judges. Don't limit yourself to thinking only of civil governmental power. This can be places of academic power, intellectual power, financial power, cultural, social power. Well, where are they from? All nations in all places. Verse 1 says, the nations rage. Verse 8 describes the scope of it. It says, it is to the ends of the earth, these nations, these places. And that is the participants, where they're from. What is this conspiracy doing? What are they up to? Simply, they unite to gain independence from the Lord and his anointed. They are uniting to gain independence from the Lord and his anointed. That's code word, anointed, for Messiah or Christ. It's all the same term. So verse 2 shows this. It says, the rulers take counsel together. Verse 3, they want to break their bonds, cast away their cords or their shackles. And so this joint secret forum where they meet and plan, it is both active, it's intentional, and it is revolutionary. They are trying to overthrow what they consider to be bondage from the Lord. So now, where we live today, where we are living and functioning and processing news and articles and commentary, we're presented with a competing narrative to this secret, this conspiracy that I'm giving you. The lens by which to interpret the problems and the needs of this world, we're always being broadcast something. It's a subtext in what we read in the news and in commentary. But here is the real narrative. Here's the real narrative. The places of power, whether it's governmental, whether it's institutional, whether it's commercial, they all are demanding independence from the demands of God. They want independence from the demands of his son, Jesus Christ. For instance, Russia does not want the Lord and his Christ to control her. China does not want the Lord and his Christ to control her. America does not want the Lord and his Christ to control her. The system, socialism, does not want the Lord and his Christ to control it. Bear capitalism does not want the Lord and his Christ to control it. Amazon does not want the Lord and his Christ to control it. And neither does J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest bank in America. In fact, every one of these governments, systems, or powers actively conspires against Christ's dominion if it does not explicitly and overtly submit itself to the Son. So you have to bring this understanding, this lens, to the foreground of your thinking whenever you hear news, whenever you hear commentary, because otherwise you're swallowing propaganda. If you don't believe that this conspiracy that I'm describing, that Psalm 2 describes, exists, you will not be able to discern the times. So now let's turn to the second section, verses 4 through 6. The second section of the psalm is found there. And if you were to subtitle this section, you would call it "The Lord Laughs and Enthrones." The Lord laughs and enthrones. Contrast in these two sections what the human powers and systems are doing with what the Lord is doing. In verses 1 and 2, the human systems, the human powers, conspire, rage, plot. They are churning. They are trying to overthrow. In verse 4, what's the Lord doing? He just laughs. He laughs. Verse 6, that's in verse 4. And then in verse 6, he enthrones. Quite a contrast. Let's look at the Lord's laughter. Verse 4 says that from heaven, looking at this global multinational conspiracy that's set against him, the Lord sees it all and he just laughs. He is not bothered. He's above it all. He's seated in heaven, it says, and he in no way feels or is threatened by it. Here's the picture of it. It's like if you were looking at a kindergarten class, the kindergartners and the teacher, and the kindergartners are unhappy. They are unhappy because nap time is coming and they do not want to have nap time imposed on them. So the children huddle. They come up with a best brilliant plan to overthrow the nap mandate. And here's what they're saying. They're saying, I don't want a nap. Yeah, I don't want a nap either. What are we going to do? I've got an idea. What's the idea? You know, so five-year-old, when it's nap time, let's burp. Let's burp together. And they all say, yeah, that's a great idea. That's our plan. Yes. So the teacher sees this plotting, hears this plotting. Is the teacher threatened by this plotting? Not at all. Not at all. The teacher laughs. The nap mandate will stand. Let's look at the Lord's response to the conspiracy. He has a higher and a deeper conspiracy of his own that will cover all of it and dominate it. In the face of this global rebellion, God is going to enthrone another power, his son, to be king over all. He's basically saying, you all are kings. But in verse 6, he says, I have set my king. So Christ is to be king over all the powers of this earth. And you have to picture this whenever you're hearing, processing, responding to, worried about the news, the powers that be. Christ will be king over Russia, over China, over America, over socialism, over capitalism, over Amazon, etc. Wow, you might be thinking, Christ over commerce, over culture. You might be thinking, that sounds so fundamentalist. Now, what I'm talking about is not an ideology. This passage tells us ultimately a person, not an ideology, is going to prevail. going to be a person, not a system of thought, and not a system of thought that we or religious people are trying to impose. The passage tells us that the Lord is setting over all of these powers and all of these systems, the person Christ, his son, over all. Well, what will that look like? Are we talking about electing Christians to political offices, hoping Christians will be installed as CEOs and vice presidents in key institutions? That's not what we're talking about here. Let's turn to the next section. The second section of the psalm was verses 4-6. The third section is in verses 7-9. And if you were to subtitle this section, you could call it, "The Lord Promises All Nations to Christ." The Lord promises all nations to Christ. So in verse 7, what we have here now is a secret recording of this deeper conspiracy. One of those, it's like those hidden recorders that gets leaked later on. The recording reveals that the conspirators of this deeper conspiracy have been planning something. They've been talking to one another. And verse 7 says, here are the conspirators. Verse 7 says, "You are my son," says one voice. "You're begotten of me." The other speaker in this recording is the son. So it's a father and a son in this deeper conspiracy. Verse 8, the father says, "Ask of me, ask of me." Those three words, "ask of me," you have tapped in this verse into one of the more mysterious doctrines in scripture. We call it, the technical term for this is the covenant of redemption. This is not the covenant of works. This is not the covenant of grace. This is the father asking a son, "What do you want for your birthday, my begotten one? What do you want for your birthday?" Verse 8 says, "If you ask me," if you ask me, the father to the son, man is not in the picture. "If you ask me, I will give you all the nations." Verses 8 and 9 tell us that when the son gets this gift, what's he going to do with it? Set it on a shelf? Frame it? Put it on the wall? It says he's going to gain full possession of an inheritance and eliminate all resistance to his taking the full possession of the inheritance. It's a picture of victory, a picture of utter domination. Now, we might feel uncomfortable with this idea of, whoa, total control, domination, destruction of enemies. But just think about it just a little bit. One thing that helps us tap into the rightness of that is our own current polarized times. You can pick any topic that's a hot topic right now. Elections or election fraud, masking, anti-masking, whatever. For some of these topics, we all have picked some kind of side where we've been able. Now, be honest about this. You do want your side to win. You want your side to dominate and eliminate and shut down the wrong side. That's not a bad desire if what you want is good and what you're against is evil. But our challenge might be, in our hot topics of today, our challenge might be that we have, for some of the topics, we may have too much certainty and not enough knowledge. Not everything is knowable. We're fallen and we're limited and we're just limited by what we hear and what we don't hear. But this much is certain and is right. Christ must and will have total domination over all powers. God has given it. Christ will take it from the Father. Christ will enact it. So verse 8 says, "You, Christ, shall break them." Now, this is why I'm saying this is not an ideology, and we're not just trying to get people into positions of power or get people into office. We, the people of the earth, the created humans, we mere humans are to pursue peace with all men, or to pursue justice, and we're to let the rulers wield the sword. But Christ, the person, not an ideology, Christ will take his dominion. Christ, the person, not the ideology, Christ, the acting living son, will bring his rod of iron to bring submission. What is that rod of iron? Well, he may use believers, but he may also use unbelievers. He may use viruses. He may use vaccines. He may use masks and distancing, or he may use the deaths of millions of people. He will have his way to subdue the nations and the powers of this earth. Christ the person, not the ideology, Christ the person will act and prevail using his rod of iron. So you who are followers of Christ, did you realize that you're Jesus? Did you realize that Jesus is the most dangerous man in history? He is both the rescuer of the weak and the oppressed, and he's also the most dangerous man in the world. Now, let's look at the fourth and the last section briefly, verses 10 through 12. Let me just boil it down into two simple questions. First of all, do you hold any kind of earthly power? Are you over people, either in a family or in an organization, whether it's small or large? Are you some kind of influencer, maybe online or in person? Verse 10, that's what's in view here. Are you some sort of king or judge, an authority? If so, if you hold some kind of earthly power, this verse is telling you, abandon the conspiracy. Abandon the conspiracy. Verse 11, serve the Lord with fear. Rejoice with trembling. Abandon the conspiracy and join the deeper conspiracy. The Son will have his way. So don't use your power and your influence primarily for keeping profit. Don't use your position and influence primarily for increasing prestige for yourself. Don't use your power and influence primarily for keeping and retaining power. Now, secondly, do you lack earthly power? Do you lack earthly power? What if you're small and without power? You're without influence. Well, you're called in this chapter to laugh and to love. You're called to laugh and to love. Verse 4, the Lord laughs at the powerful and at their conspiracy. You can laugh with the Lord. The battle's the Son's battle. It's not your battle. It's the Son's battle. Yes, he might use you in a significant way, but he might not use you. He is the key player in all this. Who knows what he will use? So you can laugh with the Lord. But you're also called to love. Verse 12, it says, kiss the Son. Kiss the Son. Where in the Bible do love and kisses for this Son come together? Where in the Bible do love and kisses for this Son come together? One place, Luke 7, when the notorious woman, known for her moral failure, came to Jesus. It says in Luke 7, starting at verse 44, then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? She has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You, Simon, gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. Verse 47, he says, therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. So in the great reversal in the gospel, Jesus was struck with this rod of iron so that you could be saved. Jesus was broken by the rod of iron and the cross of wood so that your sins could be forgiven. So join the higher and the deeper conspiracy of the Father and the Son. Laugh with the Father. Love the Son.